The Fountain of Youth Job by Bazin Maskatan, read by Cookie Mom 6067. Chapter 1. Leverage London Calling. Hardison smiled as the New Orleans office appeared on his phone. Parker sat front and center, gaze locked expectantly on the screen. Elliot stood next to her, leaning forward, palms flat on the counter and left arm brushing Parker's shoulder. Hardison knew exactly when his video feed reached them. Parker grinned, and Elliot looked away, a fraction of a second too late to hide the way his eyes lit up. "London calling," said Hardison, his chest a little tight. "What up?" "We stole a petting zoo," said Parker. "Cool," said Hardison. "Did it have baby goats? I love a baby goat." "London?" said Elliot, suspicion in his voice. "I thought you were doing that thing with Leverage Tokyo this week."
He's been in London since Tuesday," said Brianna. She was sitting off to one side, head down, laptop in front of her. "Overnight flight into Heathrow, arrival 8:12 local time."
"Hey, is that a new laptop sticker? The Ace Pride Cat?" said Hardison, waiting for Brianna's nod while wondering how in hell she was still getting into his systems. He reached for his own laptop and started typing. "It's cute, but we got to talk about how you and your Ace Pride Cat are tracking me. Didn't we agree you weren't going to do that anymore?"
"Did we agree?" Brianna glanced across the room. "Harry, legally speaking, would you say there was an agreement?"
Harry Wilson, at the other end of the counter, held up his hands. "This is not an argument I want to be in the middle of."
"I thought you'd argue anything, Mr. Wilson," said Sophie, strolling into shot, wearing coral red and holding a mug of tea.
"Not since quitting the evil lawyer business," said Harry. "I only argue for good causes these days."
"I'm a good cause," said Brianna.
"Yeah, no," said Hardison. "A good cause wouldn't be reading my email. A good cause wouldn't..." Sophie pulled a chair out, letting it scrape loudly across the floor. Hardison winced and turned down the volume on his earbuds. Sophie sat, sipped her tea, and gave him her let's-get-to-business look. "How can we help, Hardison?"
"I need my best crew on this one."
Hardison clicked the shortcut on his laptop to remote access the New Orleans screens and threw up a series of photos and a map. The first photo showed a man in desert camouflage. "Ryan Ferris, U.S. citizen mercenary, recently hired for a short-term contract providing private security for Merrick Pharmaceuticals in London, died last week. According to the official records, he died in a car crash just outside London after having an epileptic seizure at the wheel. Because he hadn't declared his epilepsy, the insurers won't pay out, not even to repatriate his body. Merrick Pharmaceuticals offered to pay for a cremation and return the ashes to his husband and their 5-year-old twin daughters in Detroit as a gesture of goodwill, but..." He paused for dramatic effect.
"Ryan Ferris didn't have epilepsy," said Sophie.
"That's my thunder you're stealing," said Hardison, scowling at her. He tabbed through a slideshow of headshots, each showing a short-haired man of similar age and build to Ryan. "Yeah, Ryan Ferris didn't have any history of epilepsy. Neither did Brett McGinnis, Jamie Osborne, Scott Canizzaro, Lee Riley, Donnie Dean, Matt Kuchar, Louis Chuvado, Christopher Dunmore, Liam Hoppe, Don Glutzner, James Langdon, Trenton Minat, Aldonzo Bresciani, Chad DeSlot, John Vinson, Austin Doyle, or Troy Collins Jr. "But their families have all been given the same cover story?" asked Elliot, his fist clenching and his voice tight. He always identified a bit too closely with working men, especially veterans, and all the dead men had done a stint in one army or another. Hardison nodded. "They're all contractors. The families don't know each other, so they can't compare notes."
"And all the bodies have been cremated, so there's no evidence of what really happened," said Parker.
"Not quite all," said Hardison. "Ryan Ferris's husband's cousin lives in London, and she got to the mortuary in time to retrieve Ryan's body." He clicked to show a photo of Ryan's body, then a close-up on the dead moth caught in his trouser cuff, and then a scientific illustration of the moth and a map of East Africa. "The husband's cousin is a lepidopterologist,"
and this is Timora shawaki, a moth found only in South Sudan. The effect on the team was almost everything Hardison had hoped for. Harry looked shocked. Parker looked excited. Sophie wore her scheming face. Brianna was typing furiously, either Googling Timora shawaki or hacking the South Sudanese government. Elliot, though, was not impressed. He stepped back from the counter and folded his arms, eyes narrowing.
Did you or your lepidopterologist friend notice anything else about the body? He asked, pronouncing lepidopterologist carefully and more than a touch sarcastically.
Hardison blinked, wondering what he'd missed. Elliot gestured at the screen.
Like, for example, the sniper bullet wound just above his ear?
The what now? Hardison zoomed in on the photo, squinting. Sure enough, there was a dark circle half hidden by Ryan's dark curly hair. He cursed under his breath. Elliot was never going to let him live this down.
Okay, not a car crash and not in London, said Harry, jumping in before Elliot could say anything else.
What do we know about Merrick Pharmaceuticals?
Owned by Stephen Merrick, said Hardison, happy to move on. He clicked to the photo of Merrick, a weaselly white man in his 30s. Recently paid $2 million via several shell companies to this man, James Copley. Click. A handsome 40-something black man. Ex-CIA. And last seen in Marrakesh 2 days before Ryan Ferris's family was notified of his death. Merrick Pharmaceuticals headquarters are protected by extensive private security and a state-of-the-art CCTV system. Click. A set of floor plans with a section of the 15th floor highlighted. And yet this area doesn't contain any cameras at all.
What's our way in? Asked Parker.
Merrick's giving a presentation to potential investors in London tomorrow. He's looking for funding to continue research into telomere extension and the clotho hormone. Longer life, basically.
Mr. Wilson and I will attend the presentation while Parker finds out what Mr. Merrick is hiding on the 15th floor, said Sophie.
She stood, preparing to stride out of the room.
Let's go steal the secret of immortality.
Chapter 2. Engineering a Longer Life.
Sophie arrived conspicuously late to Merrick Pharmaceuticals' investor conference and swept into a reserved seat in the front row. She wore cream Stella McCartney, Chanel No. 5, and a pair of overstated diamond earrings borrowed from the stash Parker, bless her, still thought was secret. Sophie, or rather Natalie Johnson, stood out just the right amount in a room filled with gray suits and hedge fund managers. Everything about her said high net worth individual. 5 seconds after she sat down, as if he'd been waiting for her arrival, Stephen Merrick walked on stage.
I'm Stephen Merrick, youngest CEO in pharma.
His body language displayed the type of confidence that came from never having been told no. This was a man certain the world had been made for him, that his ambition was noble and his greed justified. His outfit, an ill-fitting suit paired with a hoodie, made him look younger than his age, not charmingly boyish, but disturbingly immature.
Our average lifespan is 78 in developed nations, he said.
Actually, 2 more years if you're lucky enough to be born a female. What can I say, ladies?
Sophie suppressed a shudder at his smarmy delivery and gave her best charming laugh loud enough to draw Merrick's attention. He narrowed his eyes, gaze caught on her earrings. She smiled and inclined her head, then watched him introduce Merrick Pharmaceuticals' head of research, Dr. Kozak, a slight blonde woman standing just off stage between two men. She recognized the man on the right from Hardison's presentation, the ex-CIA agent, Copley.
Dr. Kozak's manipulation of the clotho hormone will, in time, completely arrest common cognitive decline, Merrick continued. Yes, we can all wave goodbye to dementia.
He actually waved to illustrate his boast. The room erupted in applause. Sophie took the opportunity to speak into her comm.
Copley's here, and Merrick's brought a bodyguard.
I'm sending you a photo, said Harry from his lower profile seat at the back of the room.
Got it, said Brianna.
She hummed over the clicking of her keyboard, her tune turning triumphant when she identified the bodyguard. Keen, ex-Special Forces. Just got turned down for a mortgage on a bougie apartment in Notting Hill.
Perfect, said Sophie,
Harry, that's your way in. Mr. Keene needs a pay rise.
Parker took the elevator. It rose slowly, floor by boring floor. Why couldn't I climb the elevator shaft?
No need, babe, said Hardison through her comm. No cameras and no tracking devices. This elevator will take you straight to the 15th floor without showing up anywhere in the building's security system, which you have to admit is more than a little suspicious. Like, what is this man, Merrick, bringing into a building that he needs to keep secret even from his own security team?
Fossilized bones.
Fossilized bones? Why would he... You know, we don't need to get into that right now, but you and I are going to have a talk later on. Have you got the camera?
Parker swung up onto the elevator's handrail, balancing on her toes. She planted Hardison's spy camera in the gap between the elevator's scuffed steel walls and its scuffed steel ceiling, grinned and waved into the lens, and dismounted via a backbend kickover.
Nice move, said Hardison.
Right. When you leave the elevator, you've got a short stretch of corridor with no cameras. But the first security checkpoint is just around the corner, and there's no door. You're going to need to be quiet.
The floor counter reached 15. The doors opened. Parker padded out silently, scanning the ceiling until she found an air conditioning grill. Sophie worked the post-presentation meet-and-greet carefully, a Merrick Pharmaceuticals prospectus under her arm. She made sure she was frequently in Merrick's eyeline, but didn't get close enough for a conversation until she was certain his team had fully briefed him on her cover identity.
They're all over Natalie's social media, reported Brianna through the comm.
Wait staff beetled past, proffering trays of barely adequate canapes. Sophie nibbled on the least messy, wearing a cream suit was such an ordeal, and made a mental note that all future jobs should be catered by Elliot. Life was simply more enjoyable when he'd infiltrated the kitchen. She extracted Harry from a conversation about the weather that threatened to blow his cover as a Brit. It wouldn't matter how convincing his accent was if he didn't know the difference between a mizzle and a drizzle.
Oh, thank goodness, he said, running his hand through his hair. One more round of weather-related small talk would have killed me. How do you do it?
I remember that I'm not really talking about the weather. I'm assessing my conversational partner's class and wealth and asserting dominance through my choice of words. For example, if I was going to describe this morning's weather to a social inferior...
They found the Tatler interview, said Brianna. An assistant is speaking to Merrick now.
Sophie took a calming breath. Showtime. Are you ready to be thrown out?
Ready? I'm desperate to be thrown out, said Harry.
Sophie threw him a grin before turning, catching Merrick's attention with a glance and a nod, waiting for him to come to her. If he'd been briefed on the Tatler interview, he knew she was a serious investor.
Natalie Johnson, she said, greeting him with an outstretched hand. He gave her a wet fish handshake and a punchable smirk.
Stephen Merrick, but you already knew that.
Youngest CEO in pharma, said Sophie, delivering the line with an edge of irony to keep him off balance.
I confess, Mr. Merrick, the field of life extension fascinates me.
What an investment opportunity. What can you tell me about your current research direction?
A recent field trial suggested a significant breakthrough, but we need investment to replicate the results in the laboratory.
Sophie raised an eyebrow.
So your work is currently behind that of Teachworth Pharmaceuticals, then?
Dr. Teachworth was just telling me he has laboratory testing underway on the genetic basis of telomere lengthening.
Merrick's brow lowered and his fist clenched.
Sophie continued to speak, keeping her tone light and teasing.
I am utterly charmed that you invite your competitors to these events. So very collegiate. Of course, the best research is always collaborative.
Merrick's face had turned an alarming shade of reddish purple. He sputtered a reply while signaling to his bodyguard. Sophie handed him a business card.
I'm meeting Dr. Teachworth's team tomorrow, she said. I'd be delighted to talk to you and your people later in the week. Before I make my final investment decision, call me.
Her heels tapped authoritatively across the terrazzo floor as she left, one of her favorite sounds. She didn't need to look back to know Merrick was watching every single step. Parker wriggled round a tight corner, curving her shoulders inwards and rolling her hips. Merrick Pharmaceuticals had narrow vents.
She suspected it was a British thing. She reached a grill and sniffed. Something smelt of ammonia. She peered down into the room below.
"Mice," she whispered.
"Mice?" asked Hardison, alarmed.
"In the vents?"
"In the lab. A lot of mice." "Right, right, right. You're above the mouse lab. I've got you. You're nearly there. Everything to the west of you is unknown territory. The here be dragons, babe." Parker frowned and decided not to ask. It was probably a D&D reference. She started moving again, listening to the tiny scrabbling and scratching noises coming from the mice, and knowing they were listening to her too. She liked having their company. The mouse sounds faded as she kept crawling. The next grill turned out to be in the center of another lab. It had benches of equipment and computers, just like the mouse lab. But where the cages should be, there were four empty hospital beds. Each had an adjustable lamp and the sort of paraphernalia she'd only seen before in an ICA. Monitors, cables, and electrodes. The arm and foot rests had black webbing restraints.
"I think I found a human lab," she said.
Hardison swallowed. "A human lab? Are you sure?"
"Yeah, definitely. A human lab."
Elliot crossed the parking garage fast, keeping low. Merrick's driver was leaning against the passenger side of his car, phone in one hand and coffee in the other.
"Cameras," Elliot hissed into his comm.
He wore the same uniform as the driver, that of a local chauffeur service.
"Going off line in 3, 2, 1, now," said Brianna. "You've got 90 seconds. "I don't need 90 seconds, said Elliot, straightening and approaching the driver. "Give me your coffee, man."
The driver, taken aback, handed it over. Elliot flipped the lid off and hurled the coffee into the driver's face. The driver screamed and doubled over. Elliot grabbed his phone, kneed him in the face, and knocked his head into the car window, confident the glass would be bulletproof. It was. The driver went limp, and Elliot slid him to the ground, cradling his head to protect him from unnecessary injuries. He circled to the driver's side, opened the door, and cursed.
"Wrong side," said Brianna. "They drive on the left here."
"Yeah, I got that." Elliot slammed the passenger door and circled back, stepping over the unconscious driver. His knee twinged. He ignored it and checked the keys were in the ignition before getting in and looking at the driver's phone. No messages or missed calls.
"Where's Merrick?" he asked.
Still gloating over having Harry kicked out of his party.
"Joke's on him," said Harry, sounding winded but cheerful.
"His bodyguard's very interested in my job opening. He's coming to see me tomorrow for a formal interview."
"Maybe he's getting cold feet over the covert human experimentation," said Hardison.
"The what?" chorused Brianna, Harry, and Sophie.
"You heard him," said Elliot.
They weren't asking the important question. "Parker, are you still in there?"
"I'm out," said Parker. "Merrick has a mouse lab and a human lab. The human lab's empty, for now."
The phone in Elliot's hand beeped, and a notification displayed on the lock screen. "Front entrance, immediately."
"Gotta go," he said, turning the ignition key.
He drove around to the front of the building and got out to open the door. Merrick didn't give him a second glance. He wasn't the type to pay attention to the driver. A blonde woman and the ex-CIA agent Copley followed. The bodyguard, taking up the rear, gave Elliot a questioning glance. Elliot tensed.
"Shift change," he said. "Straight back to headquarters."
The bodyguard's gaze went to the chauffeur service logo embroidered on Elliot's breast pocket. He nodded and climbed into the car. Elliot closed the door gently behind him. As they got underway, Copley passed a tablet to Merrick. Elliot craned his neck to try and see it in the rearview mirror without success.
"My God," said Merrick.
"You've seen my research," said Copley. "Now you know they're for real."
"What are they looking at?" asked Hardison.
"I don't know," Elliot hissed. A black cab cut in front of him. He braked and turned his attention to the road, missing part of the conversation.
"But you promised me hard proof," said Merrick.
"There was an unanticipated amount of carnage, but the footage," said Copley.
"No. The footage is a $2 million snuff film."
Merrick gestured at the blonde woman. "It doesn't give her the how. I need all of them, Copley." Copley sat back, shaking his head. I think I can get you one.
No, no, not one. All.
These are extraordinary individuals. They are extremely resistant to capture.
Well, consult with Keen, make a plan, make it happen, said Merrick.
And quickly, before my competitors get wind of this. The rest of the drive was short and quiet. Copley stared out of the window while Merrick and the blonde woman radiated a creepy excitement. Elliot was glad to drop them off.
Did you get all that?
He asked when he was back on the road.
Definitely human experimentation, said Brianna.
Sounded like some hinky super soldier shit, said Hardison. They sent Ryan Ferris and the other mercenaries up against these people they're trying to capture, and they got wiped out.
So we go public about the unethical practices? Said Brianna. Make sure the investors know. Make it impossible for him to get funding.
Harry laughed.
They're investors in Big Pharma. They don't expect it to be ethical.
Harry's right, said Sophie. Stephen Merrick has just promised a room full of people that can live longer while making a massive profit. They wouldn't care if he was experimenting on their grannies.
Harry's the key, said Parker.
I am, said Harry.
Merrick thinks you're a competitor, and that's all he's worried about. Someone getting there first, said Parker.
Patents, said Hardison. Whoever gets the patent gets the money.
Merrick already thinks Harry has an experimental subject, said Sophie slowly. I was spinning him a line earlier, and it really rattled him. We need Merrick to believe that Harry is close to beating him to the patent, which means we'll have to run some experiments of our own.
Chapter 3. So, you good guys or bad guys? Harry gave his new stolen office a last once-over. He'd hung a framed photograph of himself wearing a lab coat and posing with the current British Prime Minister on the wall, lined up a collection of awards won by Teachworth Pharmaceuticals on the windowsill, and placed a Teachworth Pharmaceuticals mug, half full of tea, on the desk. He glanced at the clock on the bookshelf, realized it was branded with the logo of the office's real owner, and whipped it off the shelf into a desk drawer just before someone knocked on the door. Come in, he said, dropping into his chair, heart pounding.
Hardison opened the door. You're 10 o'clock, Dr. Teachworth. Mr. Keene, here to interview for the head of security position.
Mr. Keene, thank you for coming in.
Harry stood for a quick handshake, gesturing Keene into the visitor's chair, and got down to business.
Can you give me a quick summary of your current role?
You could start by telling me how many staff members you supervise and how you deploy them.
Just over 100, 32 men to a shift, 3 shifts a day, to give 24-hour coverage at Merrick Pharmaceuticals HQ, plus personal security.
Ask him if they're armed, said Elliot over Harry's comm.
How many are armed? Said Harry.
Keene's expression didn't change.
All of them, sir.
Harry sucked in a breath. He crossed his arms, then uncrossed them and sat up straight, not wanting to show how nervous Keene made him. He could do this. He'd been alone with cold-blooded killers before. He checked his notes and found the next question. Have you taken on any responsibilities you consider exceptional for a corporate environment?
I personally run a counter-surveillance sweep of the building twice a day, at randomized times. Mr. Merrick is extremely protective of his proprietary data.
Hardison swore down the comm.
Ask him how.
Interesting, said Harry. What sort of equipment are you using for that?
Keene looked uneasy for the first time. He clenched his jaw before speaking. A radio frequency detector I first became familiar with on a special forces deployment.
And that's the sound of me turning off the cameras, said Hardison. Can't risk him finding the transmitting signal.
Don't ask him anything about the deployment, added Elliot unnecessarily. Harry shook his head. What sort of idiot did Elliot think he was?
Tell me about a time you showed leadership, said Harry.
Keene tilted his head and Harry panicked.
In the corporate security sector, I mean. Not the special forces. You'd probably have to kill me if you told me too much about your special forces missions.
There was a silence. The muffled tick, tick, tick of the hidden clock seemed to fill the room. Harry gripped the arms of his chair to stop his hands trembling. His knuckles turned white.
Yes, sir, said Keene eventually.
I would. Harry swallowed. Elliot sighed.
I'm coming in, said Hardison. This is painful to listen to.
30 seconds later, as Keene was explaining how he'd shown leadership at a corporate away day, Harry heard Hardison and Parker arguing in the corridor. Parker flung the door open. Hardison pushed past her, half blocking her from Keene's view.
I'm sorry, Dr. Teachworth. I couldn't stop her, he said.
I have to speak with you, said Parker.
Give me a moment, please, Mr. Keene, said Harry.
He herded Parker and Hardison out of the room, pulling the door not quite shut behind them.
I can't be seen talking to you, he told Parker loudly, walking away from the office.
I'm charging more for the new research project, Parker said, also loudly. A lot more.
They turned a corner and stopped walking. Harry sagged against the wall.
That man is terrifying, he said quietly. My next question was going to be about how he would deal with an intruder. I don't think I want to know.
You'll be fine, said Hardison, turning Harry towards his office and clapping him on the back. Better to find out the answer now than on Monday.
Sophie, power-dressed as Natalie Johnson, arrived at the restaurant before Merrick. She flirted with the maitre d' to get a table in a discreet corner and asked for the sommelier. Merrick couldn't be trusted to order a decent bottle of wine. The sommelier was perfect, enthusiastic, knowledgeable, and a touch clumsy. Sophie saw her opportunity and easily maneuvered her into knocking a fork off the table. The jangle as it hit the floor turned heads.
I'll get it, said Sophie, already leaning down, Hardison's cloning device in the palm of her right hand.
She fixed the device to the underside of the table, picked up the fork, and handed it to the flustered sommelier with a kind smile. No harm done.
Sophie stood as Merrick approached, wearing another ghastly suit and hoodie combo, and avoided a damp handshake by initiating an air kiss. Merrick's bodyguard, Keene, watched them sit and then retreated. Sophie placed her phone face up on the table, tacitly giving Merrick permission to do the same. He took the cue and lined his phone up next to hers, directly above the cloning device. A waiter brought menus.
French food wouldn't have been my first choice, Merrick told him.
Sophie suppressed her eye roll and made a mental note to leave a very large tip. She coaxed Merrick into ordering, poured him a glass of Chablis, and sat back in her chair.
I'm very impressed with Dr. Teachworth's work, she said. Of course, having such an extraordinary test subject puts him ahead of the competition. When do you expect to be able to move to laboratory trials of your work?
I have a program to secure test subjects underway, said Merrick. All things being well, we should be able to start trials very shortly.
And if all things are not well?
Merrick pressed his lips into a thin line.
This puts me in a difficult position, said Sophie. Invest in you, and I have no guarantee you'll obtain suitable test subjects. Invest in Teachworth Pharmaceuticals, and I'm putting my money into an organization with limited experience of taking drugs to market, and no experience of monetizing a breakthrough of this scale. I want to invest in Dr. Teachworth's research, but not his company.
Their first course arrived, giving Merrick time to mull over her words. Sophie picked up her soup spoon and changed the subject.
I have a goddaughter who recently completed her PhD in biomedical science, and your Dr. Kozak is her professional hero. Do you have an internship program she could apply for?
There's no need for her to apply, Merrick said, sweeping the idea away with a gesture. I'll speak to Dr. Kozak.
How marvelous!
Merrick stared down at his moules marnier, deep in thought, then returned his gaze to Sophie. He held up one hand to preemptively silence her.
I have an idea. You invest in Merrick Pharmaceuticals, and I use the capital to buy Teachworth out. You'd get Dr. Teachworth's research, with the added benefit of Dr. Kozak's input and my ability to turn a little profit.
Mr. Merrick, what a tempting suggestion!
Sophie pretended to think, allowing her brow to furrow.
However, I don't think Dr. Teachworth will be willing to negotiate directly with you. Your bodyguard was a little overzealous in throwing him out of your investor conference, and I suspect Dr. Teachworth is the type to hold a grudge. Now, my goddaughter, she's going to be delighted when I tell her. When can she start the internship?
When is she available?
Straight away.
We'll expect her on Monday.
Merrick paused, then grinned.
You're a very good negotiator, Ms. Johnson. I have another idea. You could negotiate with Teachworth on my behalf.
Sophie sat back as if surprised.
Me?
I won't take no for an answer. You agree a price and invest enough with us to cover the purchase. A couple of million extra, our research is expensive.
Maybe 5 million extra, said Sophie, watching Merrick's eyes light up.
I'd need something to confirm I'm authorized to negotiate on behalf of Merrick Pharmaceuticals.
Yes, yes. I'll have my solicitors draw up an authority.
In which case, Mr. Merrick, you have a deal.
Sophie raised her glass to Merrick.
I'll set up a meeting with Dr. Teachworth.
Hardison wandered across Leverage London's office, laptop in hand, and opened the fridge. He hummed happily. The door was full of bottles of orange soda, the shelves were stacked with produce from the local market, and there was a sandwich with his name on it. Bringing Elliot to London was genius. Parker bounded into the room, arms full of harnesses and ropes of the jumping-off buildings variety. She spotted Hardison and clattered the lot onto the table.
"Sandwich, babe?" asked Hardison.
Parker dashed over, ducked under his arm, and snagged the sandwich labeled Parker.
"What are you doing?" she asked, peering at the laptop.
"Arranging a surprise laboratory inspection," he said. He'd hacked into the UK Home Office. He balanced the laptop on the counter and searched for the right team's calendar.
"There's a very strict licensing regime. The Brits do love an inspectorate."
"Human labs inspectorate?"
Parker said, through a mouthful of sandwich.
"Huh, makes sense."
Yeah, not so much. Turns out there aren't any guidelines about keeping people in prison for experimentation purposes. Either the British government is a lot more relaxed about these things than I'd have expected, or it's so illegal, they don't even have an inspectorate.
He picked an inspector at random and added an appointment to their calendar. Monday morning, spot license holder inspection, Merrick Pharmaceuticals.
"No, my inspector friend here is going to be taking a close look at Merrick's mouse labs."
Monday morning. Brianna walked through the main door of Merrick Pharmaceuticals HQ at 8:45 and presented herself at reception.
"Dr. Claire Williams, reporting for internship duty," she said, all cheery smile and can-do attitude.
"I'm a little early. I'm just so peachy keen to get started."
The bored-looking receptionist tapped a couple of keys and nodded.
"Take a seat. I'll tell HR you're here."
"Sure thing."
Four chairs, upholstered in turquoise fabric to match Merrick Pharmaceutical's logo, were lined up along the sidewall. Brianna put her bag in the one nearest the reception desk and sat in the next seat along.
"You in?" she said into her comm.
Hold on," said Hardison. "Running checks? Connecting?"
"Yeah, I'm into the switchboard. Can't believe they don't run this through the cloud."
Employees trudged past, heads down, and swiped their pass cards to get through a turnstile. A massive screen showed a promotional film, combining slick graphics and an interview with Stephen Merrick. Brianna watched it and zoned out.
"This is it," said Hardison, startling her.
She turned towards the reception desk, where a 30-something white man in a cheap black suit stood.
"Spot inspection," the man said, fishing out some form of official ID from his inside pocket.
"I'll tell the laboratory manager you're here," said the receptionist, not bothering to look at the ID. "Take a seat."
Parker lowered herself down from the vents into a supply closet. It smelt of stationery, fresh paper, printer cartridges, and whiteboard markers. She checked the shelves, found a box of the best sort of clicky pens, and pocketed them.
"Coming through now," said Hardison.
"Hello, lab manager's office," said Parker.
"I've got a home office inspector in reception," said a bored voice.
"Spot check," he says. "Be right down."
Parker cracked the door open, checked the corridor was clear, and strode out. She'd found the main elevator shaft from within the vents. She retraced her route at floor level and reached the elevator as its door slid open. Three women came out chatting about their weekends. Parker lifted a pass card from the nearest, stepped into the elevator, and pressed the button for reception. Brianna lifted her bag into her lap and reached in to switch off the switchboard hacker. She was proud of it. Ultra-lightweight, shielded transmission signal, and fitted inside a battered Game Boy casing. Hardison had given her a Game Boy years ago when he left Nana's, and she'd harbored an affection for them ever since, buying broken Game Boys whenever she saw them in junk shops and refurbishing or repurposing them. Parker, almost unrecognizable in a navy suit and boring brown wig, collected the home office guy. She steered him to the reception desk to pick up a guest pass, started a conversation about mouse enrichment strategies, and ushered him through the turnstile and into the building. Brianna checked the time on her burner phone. Just gone 9. "Sorry to keep you waiting," a voice said. Brianna startled. She looked up to see a pretty Asian British woman smiling at her. "I'm C. Young from HR. Brianna jumped to her feet. "Claire Williams, the new intern. I can't tell you how excited I am to be working with Dr. Kozak." C. Young grimaced. "You haven't met her yet, I take it. Come with me. We need you to sign an NDA before you go anywhere near Dr. Kozak's lab." Sophie finished her presentation, turned to the audience of NHS buyers, and asked for questions. She left the last PowerPoint slide on the screen. Merrick Pharmaceuticals' logo and a brand new price list. Harry, posing as her colleague, stood next to her. Every hand in the room went up. "You are saying you want to renegotiate Merrick Pharmaceuticals' existing contract to reduce prices?" "Yes," said Sophie. "That's exactly what I'm saying. The cancer drug Merrick brought to market last quarter has already saved hundreds of thousands of lives, but it will have cost the NHS tens of millions of pounds by the end of the financial year. I want these drugs and every other drug on Merrick's books to be available to patients irrespective of spending cuts." "You understand that the reduced prices will remain in place until the next contract renewal in 4 years' time. We could be talking about billions of pounds over the contract's lifespan." "I certainly hope so," said Sophie. "And you have the authority to make this change?" Sophie looked towards the two in-house solicitors at the back of the room who were inspecting the authority signed by Merrick. "This all seems to be above board," one of them said. "We wouldn't raise any objections to a contract change signed by Ms. Johnson based on this document." Sophie assessed the expressions and body language around the room. Elation was still tempered with disbelief. She needed to give them something more. "Dr. Teachworth," she said, turning to Harry, "could you get Mr. Merrick on the line?" Harry reached for the laptop containing Sophie's presentation, closed PowerPoint, and placed a video call. It rang. And rang. Sophie held her breath. The prevailing mood shifted towards unease. The call connected. Merrick, in a beige jacket and hoodie, appeared on the presentation screen. He glanced over his shoulder, scowling, before he spoke. "Can we keep this quick? I'm in the middle of something important." "Of course, Mr. Merrick," said Sophie. Harry stepped into the shot. "This is quite an offer Ms. Johnson is making. The legal team here have verified your authority document, but we wanted to hear you confirm that she's empowered to negotiate on your behalf." "She is. After all, her investment in Merrick Pharmaceuticals will underwrite the cost." A muffled sound in the background could have been a scream. "Is there anything else?" One of the NHS procurement team spoke up. "Can we publicize this deal?" "Be my guest," said Merrick. "No, no, no," said someone behind him, so faint Sophie wasn't certain she heard it. "Now, if that's all, I really must go." He ended the call. Sophie exchanged a glance with Harry. From the tightness around his eyes, he'd also heard the background noises. She turned to the room and found herself facing wide smiles. An older woman started clapping. Her colleagues joined in. "Excellent," said Sophie. "It seems we have a deal." Brianna rubbed her eyes. She'd been in HR for over 2 hours, signing an internship contract, a terrifying waiver of privacy notice, and several non-disclosure agreements. She'd been introduced to the company intranet and talked through the procedure for claiming expenses. She was finding it difficult to keep up her chirpy Claire persona. "Another coffee?" said C. Yeon, passing her a mug and a ginger biscuit. We're nearly done. I just need to take a photo and then I can print your employee pass.
I can't believe I'm an employee at Merrick's, said Brianna. This is so exciting.
Oh, and I'll need your phone.
My phone? Said Brianna, for form's sake, digging out the burner. I can't remember the last time I was without my phone.
You'll get used to it. No phones in the building. No exceptions except Mr. Merrick himself.
No phones in the building. Got it.
See, Yon angled her computer's webcam towards Brianna and snapped a picture. Lanyard or clip for your pass card, she asked. We have rainbow lanyards, or turquoise ones, of course.
Brianna blinked. Rainbow lanyards? Was Si Yon flirting?
A rainbow lanyard?
Yeah, diversity when Big Pharma supports gay pride, said Si Yon, deadpan.
Brianna laughed. She liked Si Yon. She let herself be led out of HR, down a back corridor, and into a small elevator.
This lift's only used to get to Dr. Kozak's lab, said Si Yon, handing Brianna her pass card and stepping back.
Your pass will give you access to the lab.
Aren't you coming with me?
Si Yon shook her head.
Not a chance. Don't forget to come by for your phone at the end of the day. I'll be here until 5:30.
It's a date, said Brianna, too nervous to self-edit. Si Yon's eyes widened. Brianna's face burned. The elevator doors closed.
What was that? Asked Hardison through her comm. Was that you flirting as part of the con, or was that you flirting because you like her?
Stay out of it, said Brianna. How's Sophie doing?
Sophie has signed a new contract with the NHS, said Sophie. What's this about you flirting?
I was not flirting.
Sounded like flirting to me, said Hardison.
Hey, I'm about to tweet from Merrick's clone phone. How does this sound? British and pompous enough?
I am delighted to announce that I, the youngest CEO in pharma, put in Sophie, the youngest CEO in pharma, have reached a groundbreaking new agreement with our heroic National Health Service.
Guys, I've got to go, said Brianna, as the elevator stopped on the 15th floor. The doors opened onto a deserted corridor. She heard voices and followed the corridor round a corner. Three armed guards turned to face her, all wearing bulletproof vests. The nearest had a full beard and a pronounced widow's peak.
This floor is authorized access only, he said.
I'm Dr. Kozak's new intern, Claire Williams. Just started this morning.
The guard looked at her pass, checked something on a tablet, and nodded. He pointed to a sign on the wall.
Follow the arrows, Dr. Williams. Dr. Kozak's lab is a secure area. You'll need to swipe your pass to enter.
Brianna's skin prickled as she walked past the guard post. She felt short, weak, and fragile. As soon as she rounded the corner, she unzipped the side pocket of her bag and rested her hand on her taser. Hardison always said hacker genius was the best weapon, but Parker had taught her that a fully charged taser came a close second. Following the arrows took her through two unoccupied laboratories and to a stainless steel door. Brianna looked around. There were no other exits. The only way out was back past the guards. She bit her lip. She'd got this. Biomedical science expertise wasn't the hardest thing she'd ever had to fake, and most likely Dr. Kozak would be the type who loved to monologue. She swiped her pass card and pushed open the door.
Hi, Dr. Kozak. I'm Dr. Claire Williams, and holy shit, you really are experimenting on humans.
Three people turned to her, mouths dropping open. A blonde woman in a lab coat, blue-gloved hands holding a bloody probe, and two shirtless men strapped to hospital beds. The door slammed shut. Brianna's pulse ratcheted up to about 200 beats per minute. She could barely hear past the heartbeat thrashing in her ears. She grabbed her taser, ran at the blonde woman, and jammed the taser to her ribs, pressing and holding the trigger switch. The woman went down. Brianna dropped the taser. Her head swam. She grabbed a nearby equipment trolley for balance, saw a collection of bloody tissue-filled vials on the trolley, and retched. She shoved the trolley away, lurched sideways, and hit a stainless steel wall. The cold brought her back to her senses. She pressed her back to the wall, checked that the blonde, Dr. Kozak, presumably, wasn't moving, and looked properly at the two men in the beds. They were watching her with matching expressions of concern.
"Deep breaths," said the nearest, a white man with tired eyes and a massive nose. "It's a lot to take in."
The other man, who had light brown skin and expressive dark eyes, nodded toward a sink in the corner of the lab. "Drinking water's over there. I'm Joe, by the way. This is Nikki."
Brianna nodded, not yet ready to move.
"Brianna, I'm not really a biomedical scientist."
"No shit," said Joe, laughing.
"Are you here to free us?" said Nikki.
"Rescuing you is kind of a bonus," said Brianna. "We didn't know you were here."
"We?" asked Joe.
"Yeah, me and my team. Our client's husband was killed by a sniper in South Sudan, but Merrick lied about it. We're here to get answers for the family and to take Merrick down."
Joe and Nikki exchanged glances. "There is something I need to tell you," said Nikki. "I think you will be more comfortable if you pick up your taser first."
Brianna's knees went weak. She tensed her legs and stepped away from the wall, keeping her gaze on the two men as she crouched to retrieve the taser. Her palms were clammy. She gripped the taser tightly and backed away toward the door.
"Was your client's husband a mercenary?" asked Joe.
"Yes."
"How long ago did he die?"
"Couple weeks." The men looked at each other again. Joe nodded to Nikki.
"I was the sniper who killed him," said Nikki.
Chapter 4. Kozak was the scientist. Elliot jogged up the fire escape stair inside Merrick Pharmaceuticals headquarters, flexing his hands to ease the soreness in his knuckles. His footsteps echoed on the painted concrete.
21 guards down, he said, for Hardison's benefit. 11 to go.
The waist strap of his bulletproof vest was digging in. He let it out a notch. He'd taken the outfit, combat pants, a gray long-sleeved shirt, and the bulletproof vest, all smelling of an offensively floral laundry liquid, from the first guard he'd disabled, leaving him unconscious in a closet, wearing boxer shorts and duct tape.
"Have you seen Keene?" asked Hardison through the comm. "No sign."
Sophie heard screaming in the background when she talked to Merrick.
"Then Keene's with him. Probably has a full personal security team. Maybe some extras if they're working on op. Good. It'll keep him busy and away from here."
About that. I'm tracking Merrick's phone. He was in Surrey, but he's on his way back to London."
"How close?"
20 minutes, maybe more. I've got Harry lined up with Plan J, and I'm monitoring the traffic reports. Couple of big accidents. Nothing's moving on the M25. Roadworks in Croydon."
Elliot halted at the door to the 12th floor. "Alarm? CCTV?
"One second. Temporarily disabling the door alarm, looping the CCTV feed to the control room. You're clear to go. First guard is through the next door, walking away from you. There's no one else in sight."
Elliot moved silently down the corridor. The guard had his pistol holstered and a half-eaten banana in his dominant hand. Elliot made it through the door without the guard noticing, sped up, and grabbed him from behind. The guard struggled, raising his banana.
Elliot clamped his right hand over the guard's mouth and wrapped his left arm around the guard's neck. His stubble scraped across Elliot's palm. Elliot bent his knees to brace himself and adjusted his grip.
"Elliot, Hardison," said Brianna over the comm. "I have a situation."
"What kind of situation?" asked Elliot, tightening his chokehold. The guard attempted to bite. Elliot shook him.
"Kozak has two human test subjects in her lab. I panicked and tasered Kozak."
"Good instinct," said Elliot. "Hardison, how are we going to get two civilians out?"
"Secret elevator," said Hardison. "I've cloned Brianna's staff card. Elliot, you need to input this sequence to your card programmer and..."
"Thing is," said Brianna, "they're not exactly civilians. They killed Ryan Ferris and the other mercenaries in South Sudan. It was kill or be killed, or possibly kill and be killed. It's complicated, but either way, they definitely did some killing."
Elliot froze. Brianna was in danger.
"On my way," he said. He concentrated on the guard for long enough to finish choking him out. The guard dropped his banana and went limp.
"Are they super soldiers?" said Hardison.
Did Kozak create them?
Well, they're not stitched together out of dead body parts, so it's probably not a Kozak's monster setup. I'll ask. BRB.
Elliot released the guard and let him slide to the floor. He checked the door numbers, not finding one he recognized as an equipment closet. He bent to snag the guard's arms and picked up his banana. He began dragging him towards the fire escape.
Kozak didn't create them, reported Brianna.
Joe's offended, I asked.
Very offended.
Not Kozak's monster is right, said Hardison. Probably for the best. You know how it'd go down. A headline would refer to them as Kozaks, and then a bunch of internet pedants would be all, Kozak was the scientist, not the monsters, and then,
focus, man, said Elliot at the door to the fire escape.
Is this door alarm on?
I am focusing, said Hardison. This right here is how I focus, and I've gone right ahead and focused that alarm off for you.
Elliot heaved the guard onto the stair landing, shoving him along until he couldn't be seen through the vision window in the door. He wrapped the half-banana up in its skin and tucked it into one of the guard's pants pockets. He'd be peckish when he woke up.
Okay, said Brianna. The super soldier question is apparently hard to answer. They're telling me a story. Nikki's starting with the Crusades, so it could take a while.
The Crusades? Said Hardison.
Focus, said Elliot.
How do I get to Brianna?
Right, yeah. First, you're going to have to take out the other two guards on your floor, said Hardison. They're patrolling the corridor that leads to the secret elevator. Head back along the main corridor and turn right.
Elliot sighed, shook his head, and started running.
Parker led the home office inspector around the mouse labs, switching completed health check record sheets for blank ones as she went. The inspector stopped to write something on his clipboard. Parker used the opportunity to stroll past several cages and swipe their water bottles. The inspector restarted his walk, but halted at the first cage she'd burglarized.
Uncontaminated drinking water should always be available to all animals, said the inspector.
It sounded as if he was quoting regulations.
Parker liked that there were mouse regulations. The inspector moved on, frowning, and Parker replaced the water bottles, pausing to watch a group of mice playing a chasing game.
This simply won't do, said the inspector.
He'd reached the last cage and was sniffing the mice's bedding. He'd done the same in the other three labs, shaking his head and muttering about corners being cut. Parker hadn't touched the bedding. Any cut corners were down to Merrick's stinginess, not her sleight of hand. She caught up to the inspector, who held out his clipboard so she could see the report. He'd ticked no more often than yes, and his scrawled comments weren't complimentary.
This facility doesn't meet the requirements for an establishment license, he said. I have no choice but to give you a 3-month license suspension, effective immediately, with follow-up testing at the end of the suspension period.
He took out his phone and sent a short email.
You're lucky this is the last laboratory. 2 more failures and I'd have had to revoke the license.
The last laboratory? Asked Parker, putting on her best innocent expression.
But we haven't visited Dr. Kozak's lab yet.
The inspector leafed through his notes.
The current license only covers 4 laboratories.
Dr. Kozak's work is new.
An application to amend the license is required whenever an additional laboratory is opened.
He ticked another no on his clipboard and fixed her with a baleful glare.
1 more failure and I revoke.
No way, said Brianna, throwing her hands up and backing off.
What's going on? Asked Hardison over her comm.
I put my taser down and now Nikki wants me to stab him with a scalpel, said Brianna.
Not stab, said Nikki. Gently scratch. It's the best way to show you how we heal. I do it myself, but,
he nodded toward the restraints, still binding him to the hospital bed.
I'm not going to scratch you, gently or otherwise, said Brianna.
Joe, tell him.
Brianna's right, said Joe.
See? Said Brianna.
She should cut me, not you.
Joe, I can't watch you get hurt again, said Nikki.
Nor I you, said Joe. Every cut you take wounds me twice. My heart bleeds to know you're in pain. My soul aches to see your precious body.
Oh, boy, they're off again, said Brianna into her comm.
It's 50% wild stories about ye olden days, and 50% declarations of love with these two.
Immortal husbands fighting side by side through history, said Hardison. I think it's cute.
You would, said Elliot, sounding out of breath. Brianna, listen to me. Don't untie them until I get there. And don't even think about giving them a blade. I don't care what they want to show you.
Joe and Nikki had shifted into another language.
Italian, maybe?
And based on their soft expressions, had moved from romantic bickering into affectionate teasing. Brianna spotted something on the trolley at the foot of Nikki's bed, a stained piece of fabric, out of place in the clinical surroundings. She picked it up. It was a gray t-shirt pierced by several circular holes, each surrounded by red-brown stains. "This yours?" she asked Nikki, already knowing the answer. There was no other reason for it to be there. Nikki nodded. "And you were wearing it when?" Brianna trailed off, her fingers hovering over what was clearly a bullet hole. Nikki nodded again.
We are not easy to capture.
This is all the proof I need, said Brianna, looking pointedly from the holy t-shirt to Nikki's fully healed torso. She checked the trolley at Joe's feet and found a blue Nike shirt similarly riddled with bullet holes. Elliot? Elliot grunted over the comm. Someone near him was groaning. We could do with a couple spare shirts up here, said Brianna. The groan was cut off by a loud thwack. A thump, and the thud-thud of two bodies falling to the floor.
I got you, said Elliot.
Harry elbowed his way through the crowd of journalists in Merrick's entrance foyer. The receptionist had called the PR department, been told not to comment, and was now looking more flustered with every shouted question. Is Mr. Merrick in the building? What prompted this extraordinary change to Merrick's pricing strategy?
Is it true that today's collapse in Merrick Pharmaceuticals' share price has wiped out Mr. Merrick's personal wealth?
Harry reached the BBC's reporter, recognizable from Hardison's briefing. He bumped into her, knocked her microphone out of her hand, and bent to pick it up.
I am so sorry, he said, handing it back.
He held out his phone. I was distracted. Have you seen this? The reporter leaned across to peer at his screen. Home Office Animals and Science Regulation Unit.
What? Oh!
She fell silent and read the brief notification of Merrick's license suspension, then straightened and turned back to the beleaguered receptionist, microphone thrust out.
Is the price drop a cynical PR exercise to distract from the serious animal welfare failings identified within Merrick Pharmaceuticals' research laboratories?
The other journalist fell silent for a moment, then picked up the new line of questioning, shouting louder than before.
Merrick's nearly there, said Hardison over the comm. You sure your journalists have enough questions to keep him in reception while Elliot gets Brianna out?
Yes, said Harry, strolling over to the plate glass windows. He won't be going anywhere once this lot gets their hands on him.
I've been blocking his phone since Sophie's call, said Hardison. No internet, no calls, no messages. He's got no clue what's about to hit him.
A large black car turned onto the street, followed by an armored van.
Is that Stephen Merrick? Asked Harry loudly.
The mob of journalists rushed toward the windows. In the car, Merrick's expression turned from smug to alarmed. He barked something to Keene, who signaled for the armored van to overtake. The van sped up and disappeared around the side of the building. The car slowed, allowing every photographer and camera operator to get a shot of Merrick's slack-jawed incomprehension. The car didn't stop.
Huh? Said Hardison. Where's he?
No, 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 no. He's heading for the back entrance and the secret elevator. The one elevator I can't control. Elliot, can you call the elevator to your floor and jam the doors open? The journalists, jostling for position, flowed out onto the street, following Merrick's car. Harry let himself be carried along with them. The car turned the corner.
Too late, said Elliot. The elevator's already below me, heading down.
Parker, said Hardison. You still on third? Anywhere near the elevator? Harry and the journalist reached the corner. Neither the armored van nor Merrick's car were anywhere to be seen. Even Harry couldn't identify the back entrance. Without Merrick's branding, it was just another service door.
Parker, said Hardison.
Staff cafe, said Parker. The mouse inspector insisted on a tea break.
That's way over the wrong side of the building, said Hardison.
Brianna code red. Merrick and Keene are on their way. There might be others with them. We can't stop them, and we can't get to you first.
You, Joe, and Nikki are on your own. Chapter 5. Faster Than the Elevator. Brianna's mind raced. Her leg muscles tightened, ready to run. Her gaze darted around the room. She had nowhere to go. Merrick and Keene, his head of security, are coming, she said. Maybe others. How long do we have? Asked Joe. Like 2 minutes. I gotta hide Kozak or things will go south fast. Supply closet's over there, said Joe, looking to his left. It would be better if the doctor stayed unconscious, said Nikki. He nodded towards a tray of syringes. That's the sedative she's been using on us. Brianna injected Kozak, grabbed her by the feet, and dragged her towards the closet, making as much noise as she could. Elliot, she whispered into her comm, I can't leave Joe and Nikki here. I don't like it, said Elliot. They're dangerous. But yeah, you gotta release them. Hardison, is there another way out? The elevator's the only way out of the building, but there are vents between the lab and the elevator. They're narrow, said Parker. Are Joe and Nikki more my size or more Hardison's size? Brianna opened the supply closet door, releasing a hospital smell, combining latex and antiseptic, and wrestled Kozak through the doorway. Joe and Nikki were having a quiet but intense conversation in a language Brianna didn't recognize. She assessed the breadth of their shoulders. More Hardison size, she said. You'll fit through the vents, said Parker. They won't. Brianna slammed the door on Kozak. Okay, she said to Joe and Nikki, crossing to Joe's bed and unclipping the straps restraining his left arm. You can't get out without going past 3 armed guards on this floor, plus Merrick, Keene, and whoever. Is that an option? We'd survive, said Nikki. You might not. Merrick's guards know what we are, said Joe, releasing his right arm and sitting up. They'll start shooting the moment they see we're loose. We can't guarantee a stray round won't hit you. What if I take the vents? Brianna pointed to an air conditioning grill. And you take the firefight. I'll meet you at the elevator. It depends on how many guards Merrick has, said Nikki, as Brianna released his left arm. We might lose, said Joe. Brianna had a dizzying, claustrophobic vision of being trapped in the vents while Joe and Nikki were gunned down and overpowered. They'd be returned to the lab. Keene would increase security, and she'd have no escape route. She could hardly crawl out and go back to pretending to be Clara Williams. No, wait, she said, hit by a realization. I can go back to pretending to be Clara Williams. I'll tell Merrick that Kozak went out for a few minutes and left me in charge. If he even asks, said Elliot over the comm. Merrick doesn't notice the little people. And if Merrick wants you to take some samples? Asked Joe, his eyes going to a tray of surgical implements and widening with concern for Brianna. Clara Williams is only an intern. I'll say Dr. Kozak doesn't want me to take an active part in the study until she's fully briefed me on the experimental protocols. Joe and Nikki exchanged a look. That actually sounded convincing, said Joe, lying back down. Not my first rodeo, said Brianna. The elevator's reached 15, said Elliot. Brianna paused and strained to listen, convinced she could hear the creak as the elevator doors opened. She raced around the lab, returning Joe and Nikki's shirts to their original places, straightening everything she'd touched, and hanging her bag up on a coat hook in the corner. She paused, desperately wanting the comfort of her taser by her side, but left it in the bag. She couldn't risk anything that might cause Keene to start shooting. She dashed to the supply closet and stepped over Kozak to snag a white coat and a pair of blue gloves. You need to put back outer restraints, said Nikki as she was snapping the gloves on. Brianna's stomach turned over. She swallowed. Nikki was right, but if this goes wrong and I get escorted out, you'll be stuck here. Joe shrugged. It's not our first rodeo either. It won't go wrong, Nikki said. You've got this. He's right, said Sophie over the comm. You've got this. Remember what we practiced for Claire. Chirpy, eager, and above all, trustworthy. I'm in the elevator, said Elliot, coming up. I'm switching my cameras back on, said Hardison. Keene won't be doing a spyware sweep while he's bodyguarding Merrick. I see you, Brianna. Nice lab coat. Elliot, are you fixing your hair in the elevator wall? It was getting in my eyes, man.
I said you needed a haircut, said Sophie. Parker hissed, making Brianna snort. Joe looked up at her, eyebrows raised. My team, she said. They're here for me. Always, said Parker. Joe had refastened the clips on his left arm, leaving Brianna to fix his right arm and Nikki's left. She was still standing between them when the door burst open. Adrenaline shot through her veins. A guard carrying a gun came first, the gun trained on a dark-haired white woman being pulled along by two guards. Andy, said Nikki. A second pair of guards bracketed a scruffy white man, followed by a final armed guard. The armed man looked at Brianna. She forced herself to walk towards the new arrivals. The woman, Andy, was injured. What happened? Asked Joe. She's not healing, said the scruffy man. I killed her. Nikki stared at Andy, worry etched into his face. Joe let his head fall back onto the hospital bed, closing his eyes, devastated. The guards strapped their prisoners to the two empty hospital beds, not being gentle about it. Andy grunted in pain. Her t-shirt had a circular hole just above her waistband and was saturated with blood. Brianna peeled it back gently. It looked bad. Andy sucked in a breath. Brianna began to panic. Keene and Merrick strode into the lab. The guards finished securing the two prisoners. One of them nodded to their armed colleagues, who lowered their guns and stepped back. Keep her alive at all costs, said Merrick, barely glancing at Brianna. A gunshot wound? Asked Brianna, voice shaking. She should have taken that high school first aid class. 1 second, said Hardison over the comm. Merrick turned to stare at her. Who are you? Brianna took a deep breath and stifled her panic. Chirpy, eager, and trustworthy. She smiled at Merrick. Dr. Claire Williams, Dr. Kozak's new intern. It's an honor to meet you. Your support for Dr. Kozak's revolutionary work. Ah, you're the goddaughter. Go on, then. Stabilize her. You need to get a line in her and stop the bleeding, said Hardison. Can you see an IV bag? You want normal saline, 0.9% sodium chloride. I'll need to get a line in her, said Brianna, holding her breath as she found and opened a drawer marked sterile saline. She breathed out when the drawer contained IV bags and selected one with shaking hands and stopped the bleeding. Tell him you'll also need to stitch her and give her antibiotics, said Hardison. Elliot, go now. There's only one guard at the security checkpoint. The other two are patrolling the outer labs. And I'll need to stitch her and give her antibiotics, said Brianna, reading the label on the IV bag in the hope it included instructions. It didn't. Yes, yes, said Merrick. Get on with it. All things die, said Nikki, attracting Merrick's attention. Grateful tears welled up in Brianna's eyes. She blinked them away. What was that? Said Merrick. First guard down, said Elliot over the comm. We're in the elevator, said Parker. Going up. Everything has to die, Mr. Merrick, said Nikki, his voice soft and his gaze intense. The only reason we haven't is that it's not our time yet. If it's now in Andromache's, nothing you can do will stop it. Brianna took a chance. She laid her hand on Andy's wrist, pretending to check her pulse, and used her little finger to tap out Morse code. Veterans always knew Morse code, and if Andy was like Joe and Nikki, she'd seen multiple wars. Help. On. Way. Andy stiffened, barely perceptibly, then relaxed. She didn't look at Brianna. She curled her hand into a fist and spelt out a reply with her index finger. Hope. Help. Knows. First. Aid. Brianna choked on a surprised laugh, turning it into a cough when Merrick glared at her. Merrick stalked towards Nikki. You'd be surprised what my products can do, he said. I will carve slices off you for years to get what I want. Your time is coming. As is yours, said Nikki, his gaze locked on Merrick's. There was a long moment of silence. Merrick looked away first, glancing towards his guards for support. Now, Parker, said Hardison. Home office spot inspection, said Parker, bounding into the laboratory, followed by the inspector Brianna had last seen in reception. Merrick spun to face them. Two armed guards raised their guns. The inspector halted, jerking his head back. Everyone froze. Andy grinned. Merrick made an abrupt chopping gesture at the guards. They waited for Keene's nod, then lowered their weapons. The Home Office inspector raised his clipboard and pen. "I'm going to need the minutes from your ethics committee," he said, making a note. "Give me that," said Merrick, snatching the pen. Parker handed the inspector a replacement pen. He clicked it and started writing again. "Unlicensed laboratory, insufficient ratio of medical staff to trial subjects. Suspected coercion of trial subjects." He looked at Nikki. "Did you even sign a consent form?"
"We did not," said Nikki.
Andy laughed. Said the scruffy man. He cleared his throat. Everyone turned to look at him.
"I did."
"You selfish piece of shit," shouted Joe.
"Joe, leave it, please," said Nikki.
Keen used the distraction to sidle up to Merrick.
"Those inspectors accept bribes, sir," he said quietly, cutting his eyes towards Parker. "I overheard the woman talking to Dr. Teachworth."
"Well done, Keen," said Merrick. He signaled for the guards to leave the laboratory. Again, they waited for Keen to nod before complying.
"Elliot," said Hardison, "six guards coming your way."
"Damn it, Hardison," said Elliot. Brianna and Parker suppressed their smiles. Brianna spotted a pack of antiseptic wipes and made a long arm to reach them, busying herself with cleaning Andy's wound, while Joe and the scruffy man argued.
"What would you know of the weight of all these years alone?" shouted the scruffy man.
"You're a very pathetic man, Booker," said Joe. The Home Office inspector was still taking notes. Merrick pasted on an expression he presumably believed was charming and approached Parker and the inspector. He held out his hand for the inspector to shake.
"Stephen Merrick, youngest CEO in pharma, why don't you both come to my office so we can sort out this little misunderstanding?"
"Mr. Merrick, nothing you can say will stop me revoking your establishment license. Your mice are kept in substandard conditions, and this," he broke off, indicating everything in the lab, "is intolerable." Parker followed Merrick, the mouse inspector, and Keen out of the human lab.
"There's no need for notes," said Merrick, taking the inspector's pen again.
Parker got out her clicky pens, tapped the inspector's shoulder, and held the box out to him. He turned and selected a pen, giving her a nod of thanks. She took the opportunity to lift his phone. She opened the camera app from the lock screen, started recording video, the easiest way of getting the phone to record sound, no hacking needed, and slid the phone back into the inspector's pocket. She still had 10 clicky pins left. She tucked them away safely. They reached the security checkpoint and found it unguarded. Keen looked up and down the corridor, his brow furrowed.
"The team on this level shouldn't have left their post," he said. "I'll need to check in case there's been a security breach."
The inspector clicked his pen.
"There's nothing to worry about," said Merrick, hustling them towards the lift. "We would have been notified by the CCTV control room if there'd been a breach."
"Sir, I should..."
"You should escort us to the penthouse, Mr. Keen."
Keen fell silent. The penthouse was expensively minimalist. It smelt of cleaning products and boredom. Parker assessed the art as they passed it. Nothing she wanted to steal. Merrick led them to a large office, bypassed the expansive glass desk, and offered them seats around a tiny glass coffee table. The inspector sat. Keen stationed himself by the door. Parker leaned on the back of her chair, performatively dithering.
"Could I use your bathroom?" she asked.
Merrick huffed impatiently but waved her away. She stopped in the doorway to get directions from Keen, watching Merrick out of the corner of her eye. Merrick leaned forward and fixed a wide-eyed stare on the inspector.
"How much would it cost to make your inspection report just..."
He flapped his hands vaguely.
"Disappear."
The inspector sat back, affronted. Parker double-checked a large abstract expressionist piece on her way to the bathroom, still not worth stealing, then strolled straight past the bathroom door and out onto the roof terrace. London stretched below her.
"Hardison," she said into her comm.
"I'm here, babe.
Connect to the call."
"I'm on it. Is everyone listening?" There was a chorus of yas and uh-huhs.
"I've got you playing through the lab PC's speakers," said Brianna. "We can all hear."
A phone ringtone repeated five times, then cut out. Two people spoke at once. "Hello," said the mouse inspector. "Metropolitan Police," said a harried alto voice. There was a confused silence. "How can I help you, sir?" said the police operator. "How did you know to call?"
"You called us."
"I didn't." "Look, never mind that. I'm a home office inspector from the Animals and Science Regulation Unit, and I've just been offered a substantial bribe." In the background, Merrick protested. The mouse inspector spoke over Merrick's bluster. I seem to have accidentally recorded the conversation."
"The Animals what unit?"
"Animals and Science Regulation Unit. I'm with Stephen Merrick at Merrick Pharmaceuticals, and he's offered me £250,000 to withdraw an inspection report. That's an offense under the Bribery Act."
"Jail term of up to 10 years, said the police operator absently. A keyboard clicked.
"Merrick. Merrick. Why do I recognize that name?"
"Oh, the mouse guy."
"No, I'm the mouse guy." "He's all over the news, using the NHS to generate positive publicity to cover up what he's been doing in his laboratories. Did you say you were at Merrick Pharmaceuticals HQ?"
"That's right."
"And Merrick is with you?"
The keyboard clicked again.
"Hold tight. Arresting officers are on their way. They'll want your recording." Brianna high-fived Joe, both laughing loudly. Nikki looked up from stitching Andy's wound to give them a goofy, lopsided grin.
"Did the guy in the boring suit just take down Merrick?" asked Andy.
"Huh, didn't see that coming."
"Nor did Merrick," said Joe. Joe had stopped shouting at the scruffy man, Booker, when Andy had asked. He was now pretending Booker didn't exist. Booker seemed to be doing the same. Brianna had unclipped his restraints, but he'd stayed where he was on the hospital bed and hadn't said a word. Nikki was pointedly not looking in his direction. They could probably do with some privacy.
"Elliot, am I safe to leave the lab?" said Brianna into her comm.
"Yeah, the guards are down. You got any duct tape in there? I'm all out."
"There's surgical tape," Brianna said, going back to the supply closet to grab a few reels. She checked Kozak while she was there. Still breathing. Still unconscious. Good. She found Elliot stripping the magazines from a collection of guns and dumping the bullets into a large sharps bin.
"How's it going in there?" he asked.
"Awkward." Brianna got a whiff of Elliot and wrinkled her nose. "You smell like Nana's bath salts." He scowled and gestured at his clothes.
"It's this guy's laundry liquid."
"You got those spare shirts?" He pulled a couple of creased gray shirts out from one of the pockets in his combat pants.
"What about the other two?"
"Andy could do with a fresh shirt. Looks like Booker came in voluntarily."
"Very awkward."
Elliot finished emptying the guns, closed the sharps bin, and shoved it into the nearest cupboard. "Help me tape up the rest of the guards and you can have one of their shirts."
"Hey, I'm the hacker. Taping up the guards isn't in my job description."
"You want to go back in and enjoy the uncomfortable silence?"
"Good point. Taping up it is."
"Brianna, Elliot," said Harry over the comm. "The CIA agent Copley just drove up. He's bringing someone else in by the back entrance. Black woman, young, walks like Elliot."
"Another prisoner?" asked Brianna.
"She looks tense, but not like she's there under duress."
"Another threat," said Elliot, striding towards the elevator.
"Brianna, get back to the lab." Brianna ran.
"Hardison, you hearing this? I'm going to give you remote access to the lab PC so you can share the elevator camera footage. Andy and the others might recognize this woman."
She swung through the lab's doorway and into Kozak's desk chair, pulled the keyboard closer, and started typing.
"What's happening?" asked Andy.
"Do you know who James Copley is?" asked Brianna, disabling every cybersecurity measure on the PC to let Hardison in.
"He and Booker sold us out," said Joe.
"Well, he's downstairs bringing someone else in."
"Elevator's going down," Elliot said over the comm.
A video window appeared on the PC screen, showing the stainless steel walls of an empty lift. The floor counter, just visible on the right, counted down to zero. Brianna turned the screen so Andy could see it from her bed, where Nikki had finished stitching her wound and was using surgical tape for its intended purpose of securing a dressing. Joe, still topless, sat on the bed he'd been strapped to. Brianna joined him. "Elliot found these for you and Nikki," she said, handing over the shirts. Joe nodded thanks. He shrugged one of the shirts on and began buttoning it up, his eyes fixed on the screen. The light in the lift changed as the doors opened. A black woman, wearing green and white, walked in alone. She had an instrument case slung over her shoulder. She turned to face the camera, expression determined. "Niall," said Andy, wonder in her voice. "She came back."
"You know her?" asked Brianna.
"She's one of us," said Nikki. The camera captured Niall's head and shoulders only. She glanced at the floor counter nervously, then went through the movements of a breathing and centering exercise, stretching her neck and rolling her shoulders. When she'd finished, she gazed straight ahead, calm, prepared, ready for anything.
"I can't see if she's armed," said Elliot.
"Will she be armed?" Brianna asked Andy. Andy nodded. "She's coming to rescue us. Assuming Copley's helping her and not betraying her, she knows we're under armed guard. She'll be planning to shoot her way through to the lab." Elliot sighed.
"I'll meet her, try and talk her down."
"Elliot's going to talk to her," said Brianna.
"We should get out there," said Joe.
"She's had a challenging few days. I doubt she's in the mood to talk." Elliot waited at the security checkpoint. Surprising Niall when the lift doors opened would most likely earn him a bullet to the head. The lift clanked as it stopped on the 15th floor. Elliot did a last visual sweep to check there were no unconscious guards in sight. He held out his hands, palm up. Niall walked around the corner, right hand holding something behind her back. Elliot kept his hands where they were, empty, in clear sight, not making any sudden moves.
"Is that a gun behind your back, or are you just pleased to see me?" he said.
"That doesn't even make sense." Niall halted and slowly brought her right hand into view. She held a Glock 17 mounted in a CAA Micro Roni. She trained it on Elliot. She had a very distinctive shooting stance.
"Marine?" Elliot said.
"Not anymore." Niall stepped closer. "Hands on your head." Elliot complied.
"I'm not armed, and I'm not working for Merrick. We've released Andy and the others."
"Andy's alive?" Niall's voice cracked. "Nikki stitched her up. They'll be here any moment." Niall swallowed, regaining her composure.
"Why should I believe you?" She stepped forward again and sniffed. "Is that honeysuckle?"
"It wasn't my choice, all right?" He let her take another step. Her aim didn't waver. One wrong word, one nervous jitter, and he'd be dead. He launched into action. Duck, grab, twist, elbow, yank. Niall punched him hard in the kidneys. Pain radiated from the point of impact. Elliot grunted and pulled away. The Roni in his hands, pointing at the floor. Niall sprang back, pulling a Glock 19 from the case over her shoulder and half crouching. Elliot slowed right down. He signposted every move.
"I'm taking out the magazine," he said, releasing it. "I'm going to put it on the floor."
He crouched to put the magazine down, then stood and kicked it towards Niall. It skidded straight to her feet. He nodded at the Roni and crouched again. "I'm putting this down, too." Niall, holding her pistol in a professional double-handed grip, blinked at him. He straightened and raised his hands.
"Back to square one," he said. "Your move."
"Fine." She lowered the pistol and tucked it into the back of her waistband. Her shoulders relaxed. She grinned.
"It's not like I need a weapon to kick your honeysuckle-scented ass."
Elliot bared his teeth. The corridor was too narrow to circle. They sidestepped, feinted forward, and sized each other up. Elliot snuck a punch under Niall's guard and was beaten back by a jab-uppercut-jab-knee-strike combo. He jumped back before she could follow up with a stomp, flicking his hair out of his face.
"You need a hair tie for that," said an amused voice behind him.
"Andy," said Niall, disengaging and standing up straight, still enough of a Marine to come to attention for her commanding officer. Elliot turned. Brianna was walking alongside a dark-haired warrior who had to be Andy. Her stomach wound hadn't slowed her murder strut. Elliot's instinct screamed at him to get Brianna away from her. He took a breath and appraised the three men behind Andy. The two wearing guard shirts were Joe and Nikki, which meant the tall man with the sad eyes was the traitor, Booker.
Copley said you were being tortured, said Niall, her tone half accusing and half bewildered.
We were, said Joe. Brianna saved us.
Me and my trusty taser, said Brianna, patting her bag.
Niall raised a single eyebrow.
Why not? I believe several more unlikely things this week.
Time to leave, said Sophie over the comm. The police are here.
Police, said Elliot.
They hurried to the lift, Elliot putting himself between Booker and Brianna and crammed inside. Andy reached for Niall, squeezing her nape before throwing an arm around her.
Sophie, said Elliot, what's waiting for us outside?
Only Harry, Hardison, and me. The police journalists and rubberneckers are all around the corner at the front entrance, and Merrick is about to be brought down. Literally, that is. Figuratively speaking, we've already brought him down.
We're clear to leave, Elliot told Andy. The lift counter reached zero.
Andy zipped up her jacket, hiding her blood-stained t-shirt, and nodded. They filed through the lift lobby and followed Brianna out of the building. Sophie and Harry, perched on the hood of a silver Audi, waved. Hardison, standing next to them, remained focused on an oversized tablet. Nikki stopped in the middle of the sidewalk, blinking in the daylight. Andy gently punched his arm, grabbed Joe, and pulled them both into a hug. When she let them go, Joe reeled Nikki in, and the two of them touched foreheads, closing their eyes and breathing together. Booker watched silently, yearning in every line of his body. Yelling, getting louder, came from around the corner. Elliot braced himself for trouble, trying to make sense of the overlapping shouts.
Take a look at this, said Hardison, proffering his tablet.
Elliot and Brianna went over, followed by Andy and Niall. Hardison was streaming live news from the BBC. Two police officers were leading Merrick out of the building, surrounded by journalists. The closed captions struggled to keep up with their shouted questions.
Today's events have wiped £50 billion off Merrick Pharmaceuticals' market valuation. How do you...
NHS leaders have confirmed the contract variation signed today will remain in force. The Prime Minister has condemned rumors of previous bribery allegations. The British Medical Association has thanked.
Is it true that the board has asked you to stand down?
The camera zoomed in on Merrick's face as his mouth opened, but nothing came out. He searched the crowd as if looking for answers. One of the police officers placed their hand on his head and maneuvered him into the back of their car.
Couldn't have happened to a more deserving man, said Harry.
What about Kozak's research? Asked Niall.
I doused all the samples taken from Joe and Nikki in DNA's solution and threw them in the autoclave, said Brianna.
Hardison wiped all trace of her experiments off the lab computer and Merrick's servers.
I also posted Merrick's other proprietary data on his company website, said Hardison. Open access, baby.
Three police cars came round the corner, Merrick in the middle one. Elliot, Sophie, and Harry waved at him as he passed. Merrick's horrified double take made Elliot feel weightless. He loved this part of the job.
Copley's got footage of us, said Andy. Footage of our abilities.
I got you, said Hardison. Copley's good at security, gotta give him that, but I'm me.
10 minutes ago, I got past his firewalls and injected a virus that will irretrievably corrupt every file on his system, on his cloud storage, and on his backup drives, everything.
He's got printouts, said Niall to Andy. Conspiracy boards tracking you through history, tracking the good you've done.
I can't touch hard copies, said Hardison, but I can sweep your digital footprint, same as I do for my people.
Andy nodded.
We'll deal with the hard copies, and...
She glanced over her shoulder at Booker, keeping his distance. Sort out our internal issues.
Once that's done, can your team help us find the jobs that are best suited to us?
Sure can, said Elliot. Leverage International could use the extra muscle, and he'd like to keep tabs on Andy's team. He didn't want to risk another accidental encounter. They might have managed to avoid casualties this time round, but he didn't believe in pushing his luck.
A joyful shout cut through his thoughts. Woo-hoo-hoo!
Elliot looked up, shielding his eyes. A small black-clad figure had launched herself off the roof of Merrick Pharmaceuticals, arms spread wide and blonde hair streaming behind her. Parker, Elliot and Hardison said together. Parker hurtled toward the sidewalk, shrieking with delight. Her rope system brought her to a stop at about head height. She unclipped her harness, forward flipped elegantly to the ground, and squeezed in between Elliot and Hardison, slinging an arm around each of them. Elliot looked around. Everyone accounted for. Everyone safe. Warmth filled his chest. He leaned into Parker's side. Joe gazed up at the building. Faster than the elevator, he said in wonder. The end.